This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We welcome Roddy Jones back in on this three-hour tour on a Monday morning. Great to have old number 20 here in the program for the next 3 hours. We've got a really good show. Roddy, great to have you. How's your weekend? All good, I hope?
Weekend was good, Wes. I am drinking up the Olympics through a fire hose right now. I love the Olympics. I just watch all of the sports. Like, handball is my favorite sport every 4 years. I guess 5 years now. But handball needs to become a thing in the United States. That's neither here nor there. I am trying to be patriotic with my shirt. I've got USA lacrosse shirt on. It's the only shirt that I had that said USA. So I'm happy to be here. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, thank you. We've got an interesting show. We're going to start with Olympics, but maybe not with handball this morning. We've got a really good program. And don't forget, at 9 o'clock this morning, we're going to have the official ACC preseason poll as voted on by a panel last week at the ACC kickoff in Charlotte. And some of our guests will be commenting on that as well. So that's at 9 o'clock. Remind you, we'll do that then. We're going to start with the Olympics. However, handball is not the topic, nor is, let me think what else I've seen so far. Swimming. No, we're not going to talk swimming. Not in the light we're going to discuss it here. We will touch on swimming.
Skateboarding?
In just a second.
Skateboarding? Are we talking skateboarding?
No.
First year for skateboarding?
No,
we're
not talking that. Here's what we're going to talk about. Basketball. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness. I wanted to avoid this.
I mean, we started off in Vegas with some of these exhibition games. And some of the exhibition games, you're kind of like, when you lost to Nigeria, you're kind of thinking, okay, wait a second. Are we going to be okay? Then we lose another one. And I say we because we're Americans. You lose another one. You pick up a win along the way and you feel pretty good about yourself. And then you play France, and I got to be honest with you, I didn't watch any of the game. I didn't watch the replay yesterday after I knew the result, Roddy, because I couldn't believe it. I can believe it because here's the reason. You're playing – it's basically an NBA pickup game because Rudy Gobert and Evan Fournier are playing for France along with other talented guys, and the U.S. – there's no chemistry among that team. There's no chemistry among some of these. I mean, they lost 83-76, first loss since 04. And I'm thinking to myself, what are we doing here? I mean, have we sent the best players? Have we sent any kind of chemistry? You know, are these guys, because of the quick turnaround from a year ago to now, are they tired? I don't know. But I know this. We're not supposed to lose, man. We're not supposed to lose in the first game for sure.
You're exactly right. I mean, first loss since 2004 tells you that. And look, I'll answer the question, your first question. Did we send our best players? The answer is no. There's a lot of guys that did not want to go to this Olympics. And here's why. Number one, you had the long season that they just got done with. And the fact that these guys didn't really have a 2020 summer. Because of COVID,
right?
They didn't have, and most of them don't want to give up another summer to go play for Team USA, or they're nicked up, banged up. Guys like Anthony Davis who got hurt in the playoffs. So there's some reasons that a lot of these guys have turned it down. But you had three guys that got to Tokyo like 10 minutes ago: Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, Devin Booker. They just got there. They haven't practiced with the team all that much. They may have been, especially Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton. Probably been partying the last, you know, week and a half. So,
good point.
The U.S. I think is going to be fine. They were something like 8 for 32 in the second half. This team is not going to shoot 8 for 32 for the entire in a half for the rest of the tournament. They're just too good to do that, I think. But right. But these losses have started to string together in a way that makes me a little concerned, and I'm sure you are as well.
Well, here's my concern. It's going to invite talk about restructure again and keeping a team together and putting players together for like 3 year cycles or 5 year cycles so you can have an Olympic appearance or two out of some guys. I understand that. But the whole basketball thing that as it relates, because number one, it's a point of pride in America. It's a point of pride in this league. You know, Mike Krzyzewski did such a marvelous job with this deal. But here's the other thing that just catches your eye here a little bit. There's going to be some talk somewhere about resetting this back to when we had the college kids. And I'm not sure. Look, and I love the college guys going over. I love the 84 U.S. Olympic team. I got a chance to watch the 84 U.S. Olympic team practice in Greensboro before they played an exhibition game against NBA players at the Coliseum. I mean, it was up and down the floor. It was Jordan. It was Sam Perkins. It was Patrick Ewing, Chris Mullin, Steve Alford, Vern Fleming of Georgia was on it. Wayman Tisdale. I mean, it was take names and ask questions later, right? I mean, it was a phenomenal team. But all that ended 4 years later in Seoul when they lost. And then by the time we got to Barcelona in 92, well, we brought the heavy artillery in. Roddy, Kevin Durant's on this team, but so is JaVale McGee. I mean, I don't know if there's the way. Okay? Here's the last thought on this. And a lot of people look at this like, okay, is the landscape changing in college basketball where you can take a kid at 18 with name, image, and likeness and put him in the Olympic movement for 8 years or something like that? If the U.S. does not win gold or silver, that's going to be the conversation. The reorg of USA Basketball, and Grant Hill, by the way, is in charge of this now. The reorg of USA Basketball will be underway if they don't win gold or silver.
Yeah, I don't know, Wes. I mean, maybe. I think there is something to be said for how do you entice the best players to go and play? How do you get your Magic Johnson, your Larry Bird, your heck, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, when they played together in 08 and 12? So how do you get those guys to go and play? And the truth of the matter is we're kind of in a transitional phase when it comes to NBA stars. I mean, the best players in the league have already done the Olympics a number of times. So what is the incentive for them to go and do it again? Which is why you end up with guys like JaVale McGee. And by the way, JaVale McGee, mobile big, good rim protector. So much needed on the team. But the fact of the matter is, if we go back to the days of the college basketball players jumping on Team USA, are we going to put Cade Cunningham on the team and Scottie Barnes? Like, those are puppies.
They're young.
They're 18 years old, 18, 19.
And here's the other thing. They're going to go over there because France is not changing. Spain's not changing. Nigeria's not changing. They got five NBA guys on the roster, including Josh Okogie, who played at Georgia Tech. I mean, they're not changing. So, in other words, if everybody says, well, but college guys, name, image, and likeness, you could go. No, you can't, because here's the rip. You're going to put Cade Cunningham over there, and Evan Fournier is going to put him in a blender. I mean, it's going to happen. You're going to take, you're going to take a freshman big or a sophomore big over there or somebody like that. You take, I don't know, anybody who played in college basketball last year over there against Rudy Gobert. He's going to fold him up like a chaise lounge and slam him in the basket. I mean, it's going to happen. So,
Evan Mobley is not going to fare well against Rudy Gobert.
No.
Let's just say that's not going to go well on a consistent basis. No. Not yet. Maybe down the line. But Rudy Gobert is the best defensive player in the league.
Right. I mean, Thursday night's going to work out for Evan Mobley. I'm not sure Rudy Gobert would work out for Evan Mobley. So, I mean, the idea of kind of how all this is going to fit, I think, though, I will say, and knowing a little bit about kind of how that USA basketball thing works, I'll say that no gold, silver. They play for bronze, win bronze. There'll be a call for a reorg. And it'll be interesting to see how Grant Hill handles that because he just took over for Jerry Colangelo as the head of USA basketball. There is good news. And maybe Coach K. Hey, wait. Well, hold on. I forgot. This is Coach K's last year coming up, Roddy. Maybe we can just let him go run USA Basketball. Maybe Grant calls Coach K, hey, help me put the team together. Coach him up a little bit.
I like a little retirement project for Coach K. You know, he stays around the game. USA Basketball, not nearly as taxing as Duke. He does have to recruit. He does have to recruit. He's going to have to get some of those guys to come back. But maybe they decide to go a little bit younger. Maybe you say, hey, JaVale McGee, Kevin Durant, some of these older guys, you guys stay home. Let's turn it over to Devin Booker and Trae Young and some of these younger guys who are playing in the NBA, yeah, who are absolute stars or budding stars, maybe not quite there yet.
There you go.
But still have that pride. Like Rudy Gobert is going to play for France until the wheels fall off because he has the entire French national team's hopes really on his back, especially with him being able to stay in the paint for forever. Why is that an international rule? Yeah. Why is there no 3 seconds? Get him out of there.
Oh, dude, look, you can't even call this FIFA. FIBA basketball, that you can't worry about that. If you're going to worry about officiating FIBA basketball, that's the least of your troubles. Let me give you some good news here before we get to the break. We do have good news involving the ACC in Tokyo. First up, it's swimming, where Virginia's incoming freshman, Emma Wyant, won silver in the 400-meter IM. She did it in a personal best of 4:32.76. Incoming freshman, Roddy. I mean, seriously? Just 18 years old, and she comes in there and rolls out of there with a silver medal. Congratulations to Emma.
Big congratulations. It's the youth that we saw, that we have seen in the pool, and we're going to continue to see, not just from the U.S., from all over, is really cool to see and to watch. Emma Wyant doing an excellent job. First off, how you swim 400 meters, I have no idea, especially with four different strokes. But to be able to go in as an incoming college freshman and win a medal at the Olympics, her career has just taken off. I'm fascinated to see just how she continues to excel after an incredible performance in Tokyo.
All right. Also, former Notre Dame fencer Lee Kiefer is a individual gold medal winner in foil. Congratulations to Lee, four-time champ at Notre Dame and the winner in foil in Tokyo. So congratulations there as well. Another win, another gold for the ACC. And we'll keep track of that as we move along in the next couple of weeks from Tokyo as well. All right, on the show today, the preseason poll will be released at 9 o'clock. We have David Hale on this program. We have David Teal back for another appearance. Andrea Adelson will be here. And we got a couple of In Case You Missed It with Kenny Pickett and Mack Brown from our coverage in Charlotte. We'll get Roddy's thoughts a little bit on where the preseason poll might go. We're also going to go down the realignment road today. And I hesitated to do this, but I think it's now bubbled to a bigger story and it's starting to grab some tentacles about what certain schools will do and what the reaction among other conferences will be if Texas and Oklahoma, and all indications are, will go to the Southeastern Conference at some time between now and 2025 when their television rights package ends. How does that work? Look, we understand we're going into the pool of speculation. You know me, Roddy, we're going to cannonball at the deep end of the pool of speculation here a little bit. But the story has reached a dollars and cents situation. But conventional thinking is kind of getting skewed to the side. We'll talk about that. We'll get into a little bit about how all this stands and try to give you some information or some ideas. Because concrete, accurate information right now is still pretty much speculation because we haven't heard, as I told you before the show, we haven't heard from anybody from Texas, nor have we heard from anybody from Oklahoma, Roddy.
Sure haven't. No, we know we have not. So anything that is concrete, well, look, we've been through this. Anything that is reported to be true, don't believe it until it happens. And anything that is reported to be absolutely out of the realm of possibility, don't believe that until it doesn't happen. This is realignment, people. We are in a brave new world that we have been in before. So just remember back to how it was the first time. Believe everything and believe nothing at the same time. It's all possible and it's all impossible.
And here it is, kids. The ACC preseason poll right there. There it is, sitting right in my hands. Mom's the
Someone's
word
gonna pause
9 o'clock.
That and grab it and put it on Twitter.
Mom's the word till 9 o'clock. All right, sit tight. Full three-hour Packer and Durham ride on a Monday. Roddy Jones is here for Pack. Mark's doing better, hoping he's on the road to recovery. You could get to see him soon here on your television screen. Don't forget, we're on SiriusXM, ACC 371, always streaming for you on the ESPN app as well. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, actually top of the hour, 8 o'clock, David Hale will be here. But the reaction time now, where do we stand on this realignment? We'll get into that with Roddy Jones as Monday morning on Packer and Durham continues on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, Monday morning edition with Roddy Jones, Wes Durham. All right, when we were here Friday, EMAC was here, by the way, Roddy, for T-Shirt Friday. Yep. And we had a little bit of discussion about this realignment thing starting to percolate, if you will. Grandmother's word, percolate.
Good word.
The concept of Texas and Oklahoma going to the Southeastern Conference turned college football on its ear last Wednesday night, essentially. Now that we've had time to digest a little bit of this, and you're starting to hear a lot of heavy speculation, take me through where you stand on the idea of the move of these two schools and essentially then causing structural problems within another Power Five conference.
I don't like it, obviously. The instability that realignment recreates, like I said in the last segment, mm-hmm. we've been through this, and I didn't like it last time. When the chips all fell, you ended up with Nebraska leaving Oklahoma and Texas and all their big rivals in the Big 12 or the Big 10, where they initially were very good and then since have, you know, not struggled much more mightily. You ended up with Colorado leaving many of the same rivalries. So it doesn't feel great. But you know what's driving it all? It's money. And Oklahoma and Texas see an opportunity to go to a league that is going to make an astronomical amount of money and in all likelihood, close the gap that they currently have with the Big Ten in terms of media rights distribution. Mm. And Big Ten has really set the bar. They've got their TV contracts coming up. That bar is going to be raised. The SEC has had its bump, but the only way for it to get another bump is to go back to the table of the conversations with the media rights holders, ESPN in particular, and say, hey, look, we got Oklahoma and Texas now. How much are you going to pay us for that? So it makes sense from a dollars and cents standpoint, but from a college football standpoint, it certainly doesn't feel great to have Oklahoma and Texas trying to jump on the bandwagon with Alabama and LSU and Auburn and Georgia. That doesn't feel great, and it's going to create a lot of insecurity and instability for everybody else, including our league.
Yeah, a couple of things about Texas and Oklahoma here to kind of use from a historical perspective. Let me start with Oklahoma, in that Joe Castiglione has been an outstanding athletics director. He's one of the handful of really, really great athletic administrators in college athletics. And Joe Castiglione's done a phenomenal job at the University of Oklahoma. However, Oklahoma and Texas, who were once in the Southwest Conference together, well, Texas was in the Southwest Conference. Oklahoma was ultimately in the Big Eight. They merged into this Big 12 Southwest Conference, you know, conglomerate a few years ago. Understand, though, that when Missouri was in the old Big 12, Roddy, I say the old Big 12, Missouri was a Big 8 school. And you remember when you were talking about the reference of 16, 17 years ago, when we started this alignment and realignment and conference expansion or the plate tectonics of college athletics, if you wanted to, Texas started to craft their own message a little bit, sometimes to the dismay of other members of that conference. It got so contentious to a point that when Missouri was still in the league, Missouri essentially started taking role as to who was with them and who was with Texas. And that led to a meeting one time in Kansas City where the athletics director at Texas, DeLoss Dodd, sat at one end of the table with his group or his clique, if you will, and Mike Alden, who was then the athletics director at the University of Missouri, sat at the other end of the conference table with his clique. And there were empty seats in between on both sides of the table. To show you how divisive that got. Now, does Texas have a running mate in this in Oklahoma? It sounds that way. There are reports that this event and this transition has been going on for the better part of 6 months. But here's the other side of it. And I'll just add this, and then we'll get to the potential of the ACC. The fact that the Southeastern Conference was doing this reportedly without Texas A&M knowing, that's a whole nother kettle of fish. Okay?
good. And it's part of the reason Texas A&M left the Big 12. They didn't want to play second fiddle to Texas anymore. They wanted to be able to go to Texas recruits and not have to say, well, we're not Texas. But they can walk in and say, if you want to play football in the SEC and stay in the state of Texas, we are the only place to go. And they got that. Mm-hmm. But now Texas A&M is in a familiar position where they are being overlooked for the University of Texas. And I think the politics, Texas politics, particularly when it comes to football, are going to have a say in this. There is a reason that it was Baylor and not Houston in the original iteration of the Big 12 when the Southwest Conference broke up. It was politics. Houston was the pick until politics got involved, and Houston was the odd man out, and Baylor got in. So this is going to play out in ways that we don't even know. The question is it too far down the line to stop? And I think it looks like the answer is to that is so far is yes.
Well, I don't disagree with that. Okay. Let's switch here to the gear on Jim Phillips talking last Wednesday morning at the Commissioners Forum in Charlotte at the ACC kickoff. He talked about the value of football, the priority the football is going to take to run with basketball, to push this league forward. And then all of a sudden, less than 12 hours later, we've got this, we got this explosion potentially of Oklahoma and Texas going to the SEC. Where does this impact the ACC? First of all, there's a ton of speculation about 16 to 24 schools and Premier League-ish type setup in college athletics. Let that lay out for a while. Don't listen to any of that at this juncture, because here's the problem. There are contracts that tie leagues to a minimum of 3 years, 4 years from now, and some that go as many as 15 years from now in the case of ACC membership. So all of that is down the road. How important are eyeballs? How important are fans? It's all interesting. Here's the thing the ACC goes to the table with. Whether they're proactive or reactive in this at this juncture, these are the characteristics of the Atlantic Coast Conference. No Power Five conference in the country has more major television markets in its footprint right now than the ACC. Not the Pac-12, not the SEC, not the Big Ten, not the Big 12, not the American or anybody else who also lines up and goes. That's a critical thing to understand, and other leagues know it. While you count fans and you count dollars, understand there's a differential in the two. The value of the economics here also plays to the favor of the ACC by being in those bigger markets. Roddy, the television markets get lost in the conversation quick here because we start talking about bigger institutions, bigger facilities, and the ability to generate dollars as well.
Yeah, we do. And some of that is lost. And I think the ACC in this is going to be aggressive. I would expect Jim Phillips to be aggressive. There's nothing about his personality that we've learned since he got named commissioner of the ACC that would suggest that he's not going to be. And we talked about the revenue gap. I just talked about it between the Big Ten and the SEC. Well, the gap between the SEC and everybody else in terms of media rights distribution is significant. And the way one of the ways that the ACC can start to close that is to add a school and be able to renegotiate that deal that they currently have with ESPN, our employer. So if you're able to go out and add a school, if you're able to go out and somehow convince Notre Dame to come in as a full football member, that allows you to walk back to the table with an enhanced plate of offerings, and maybe you can start to close that revenue gap. So I would expect Jim Phillips to be aggressive here. And if there is instability in other leagues, try and find opportunities where it makes sense to bring in another institution to this league.
All right, let's take a call, 844-SAY-ACC, and Tremaine in North Carolina before we get to the break. Tremaine, good morning. Tremaine, somewhere in the Hello? Connections and the plugins, we lost Tremaine. We will keep an eye on this story. It's going to be interesting to see how it formulates. There will be more speculation when you hear from Texas, Oklahoma, or SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, then you know you've got something. Take a break. Coastal. Yeah. Perception versus reality is next, and Roddy Jones unveils who he thinks will win the Coastal and how it lines up. The official preseason polls at 9 o'clock right here on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham's Monday edition rolls on with Roddy Jones, West Durham. Welcome you back to ACC Network. Don't forget, at 9 o'clock, we're going to release the official ACC preseason poll for football, Coastal Division, Atlantic Division, and we'll also give you the overall favorite. Roddy, before we get to this, before we get to kind of where you and I are, I want to throw a couple things up here. First of all, I want to go to the Coastal FPI rankings here. I want you to have a look at the Coastal FPI numbers here, because I think these are interesting. And really, no surprise there. Miami, Carolina at the top. But look behind them here. Now, those are the ACC ranks, not the Coastal ranks. We just took the seven schools and collected them in the mix here. Anything you see interesting?
The thing that stands out to me, Clemson's obviously number one according to FPI, but then the next five schools in the ACC lie in the Coastal. And that's why when people make fun of the Coastal division, I'm like, well, wait a minute. This year the Coastal is deep and it is loaded. And I think for the top three or four teams, heck, this looks like the top five teams, you could really – it's really close. It's tight in terms of who's going to win this thing. So the fascinating thing, or one of the more fascinating things, is that Miami at the top, FPI really liking Miami. And it makes sense with all the production that North Carolina lost on the offensive side of the football. FPI is not going to like that. I mean, what's it going to go off of if you're losing, you know, two receivers that were excellent, two running backs that put up big numbers as well. But pretty fascinating that out of the top five,
all right,
out of the top six, five of them are Coastal Division schools.
All right, here's FPI's percentages to win the Coastal. Miami at 47%, 17% more ahead than Carolina.
That's incredible. But look, we forget that Miami was third in the ACC last year above Carolina. Miami was the team after Clemson and Notre Dame that finished the highest. Now, the end of the year game between Carolina and Miami is obviously tainted the way we feel about that, or colored the way we feel about that in a negative light for Miami. We kind of forget how good the Canes were last year. Now, they won some close games, but they've got just about everybody back. So I can see why FPI likes the Canes a little bit. I really can.
All right. There are two schools here. Look, the Carolina-Miami-Miami-Carolina thing was almost a consensus last week, right? Those are the two teams that just about everybody liked at the top of the Coastal Division. The real intricacy of the Coastal, I think, starts with Pitt and Virginia Tech. Now, I went to Charlotte last week thinking I might vote Pitt second. I did not. We'll show you what I did in just a moment. I did not vote Pitt second. I voted Miami second, Pittsburgh third. But, Roddy, more and more I heard the talk last week, the Carolina-Miami thing was almost a separator. And then it became Pitt, Virginia. I had as much trouble with Virginia and Virginia Tech as I did with anything else in the Coastal preseason poll.
Yeah, the fact that we have made these bright lines of demarcation, I think, is a little bit of a disservice to some of these other schools. We talk about Miami and Carolina at the top, and then it's Pitt and Virginia Tech, and then in most cases it's Virginia, and then it's everybody else. So I don't think it's going to play out like that, or I don't think we should just automatically assume it's going to play out like that, because Pitt's a really good football team, and I get what they're losing on defense is a little scary, but all the guys that are going to play for Pitt that are replacing Damar Hamlin and Paris Ford and Rashad Weaver and Patrick Jones, all those guys have played a lot of football to the point where the Pitt coaches are kind of like, yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of experience coming back. We're not overly worried about it. So, and then you look at Virginia. That's the other interesting one to me, because we just kind of forget about Virginia. After you get done filling out your rankings with Virginia Tech and Pitt, you're like, oh, who's up? Oh, there's Virginia. They should be pretty good. Look, Virginia had a ton of injuries last year. They've had injuries in the defensive backfield the past two seasons. So at some point, that luck has to end. And then they had injuries at quarterback. We saw four different quarterbacks for Virginia a year ago. If health is a factor for Virginia, if they can stay healthy, that offensive line is going to be much improved. Brennan Armstrong should take a big step forward. And the defense is always tough as long as they're healthy, particularly on the back end. So Virginia is one that I think we need to pay more attention to.
All right, I want to go to my preseason poll here first, because as you might have guessed based on what I said, I kept it fairly conventional to what most have thought, okay? The biggest struggle I had was making the decision after Carolina to put Miami second over Pitt. I had Pitt and Miami kind of like 2A, 2B, and after talking to De'Eric King on set and a little bit offset, I think he's back, and I think he's got a legitimate chance. Biggest conundrum for me was Virginia Tech and Virginia. I think Georgia Tech is going to be significantly better, but the schedule, they're playing everybody but the 72 Dolphins and the 85 Bears. I mean, they're playing, one of the best FCS, Roddy, you know this, one of the best FCS programs in the country is their easiest game. I mean, that's Kennesaw State on September 11th. I think Gunnar Holmberg makes a big difference. Jeff Ferris, you know, the offensive coordinator, David Cutcliffe back home. Play. Duke may be better, but the rest of the division is just lights out. So that's the way. You got any problems with what I did there?
No, I got no problems with it. Yeah, as you said, fairly conventional, but I have no problems because, again, like the margins are so thin that there you can kind of shake these up in a lot of areas and roll it out there, and you wouldn't have a lot of argument for me.
Okay, let's go to Roddy's coastal poll. Take me through your logic here and what all you see as the coastal. Whoa, hold on. Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Settle in.
I know.
Here we go.
I know. I talked all that mess and I put Virginia at five. I know. You're surprised. The big one coming out of mine, I had North Carolina third. And here's why. I think North Carolina is going to be an excellent football team. I really do. I think this is a team that is capable of winning 9 or 10 games. But if North Carolina wins 9 games, that is a disappointment of a season because of the expectations that we've heaped upon them, which leads me to a couple things. One, if you do not put Pitt in your top two, I do not blame you because they play Clemson. But Pitt also gets North Carolina and Miami at home, both of those coming after October 29th. October 30th for Miami, November 11th for North Carolina. That North Carolina game is on a short week. It's after Pitt plays Duke. North Carolina is going to be coming off at Notre Dame, Wake Forest in the non-conference. Then they've got to turn around on the short week and go up to Pitt. The third thing that led me to North Carolina at three was just the evolution of a program. North Carolina is now to the point where they most likely, we'll see what happens when the official ones come out, are going to be voted number one in the Coastal. They are who we've talked about over and over and over. They are going to be the hunted. They're going to get everybody's best shot, which means you have to play your best on a week-in, week-out basis. And they're going to be doing it with young guys, particularly on the offensive side of the football. And I just have to see it. I know Sam Howell's great. Ty Chandler is going to be a really good addition, but Ty Chandler can be really, really, really good and still not be as good as Javonte Williams and Michael Carter were last year. And then the receivers on the outside, with the exception of Bo Corrales, are going to be really young. So we just have to see the consistency on a week-in, week-out basis. And I think Miami's going to have that North Carolina game circled with every color marker you can circle it with. Green, orange, red, blue, purple, all of them. That was an embarrassment the way the season ended last year. You don't think Miami's going to be fired up for that game? No, I absolutely think they will. I think Miami's going to be excellent on the offensive side of the football. They've got some reinforcements coming on defense. Tyreek Stevenson going to be an excellent addition in that secondary. Replacing the two defensive ends is going to be tough, but Manny Diaz taking over the defensive play calling. I'm buying into that. So I like Pitt. I like Miami. I like North Carolina. Just my gut told me to go in that order with Miami 1, Pitt 2, North Carolina 3.
All right, I'm going to tell you October. I said this a little bit last week with Kelsey. I will say it again. October 16th is going to be the D-Day in the Coastal Division, because on October 16th, Miami visits North Carolina, and Pittsburgh visits Virginia Tech. That's the D-Day in the ACC's Coastal Division. A lot can happen in that 24-hour period to determine who ultimately is in Charlotte and who ultimately continues their climb in the 21 campaign.
And the thing about that October 16th game is Pitt's off a bye, Virginia Tech is not. I know it's in Lane Stadium. I know it's at Virginia Tech. But Pitt coming off a bye, they've got a tough stretch of their own. I mean, Pitt's got a stretch where they're going to go at Virginia Tech, Clemson, Miami, at Duke, North Carolina. That's a tough stretch. But at least you start that stretch against Virginia Tech on the road off of a bye where Virginia Tech has to play the week before.
All right, I want to finish on this thought here. Your thinking is that we're all talking about Carolina's sledgehammer job on Miami too much, almost as if it's foretelling of what 21 will be. And you're thinking Miami brings 91% of their production back, which is not only the best in the ACC, it's second best in the FBS. You're thinking then that Miami, not just that game, but Miami as a whole has a lot more back, and the last game, the one against Carolina, rather, is not indicative of who that team is, right?
Yes, absolutely. Was that a bad showing for Miami? Yes. North Carolina found a weakness, and they exploited it. And again, Michael Carter and Javonte Williams probably bumped each other and themselves up around in that game just by their performance, making guys miss downfield, making all the right reads. But Miami had two major issues throughout the season last year. One was an inability to consistently run the football. That offensive line that's coming back, it's in its second year under Rhett Lashley's system. They had a full spring. They've got a full summer. They're also getting older. This was a young offensive line last year that was in its first year in a new system in a COVID year. So I would expect that to be better. Secondly, they were inconsistent catching the football down the field in particular. There were just too many situations where Miami receivers had opportunities down the field and it had drops. Well, Charleston Rambo comes in with all the bona fides that you want from a receiver. Five-star recruit, production in a major conference in a big-time system at Oklahoma. He comes in and I think he solves that. You add that to the three running backs they have, De'Aaron King, Mike Harley, and Will Mallory. And I think Rhett Lashley is going to be feeling pretty good about his team's ability to be the best offense in the league.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Mac Brown, by the way, on line one, Roddy, as we get ready to go to break here. Check in with you on some of your preseason thoughts.
Carolina fans, feel free. Come on, Coach, I know Mac Brown has used some of my clips before as bulletin board material. I would expect this to be the same. But I think the concerns are legitimate. A young offense, the consistency, I know the defense is going to be better, but offense, Wes, offense wins games in this league in college football in 2021. So we'll see. I could be dead wrong, though. I could be dead wrong.
All right. David Hale coming up at 8 o'clock, by the way. David Teal at 8:30. A couple of in case you missed it's along the way, too. Next, Mac Brown. With some sweet-looking Air Jordans, by the way. Jordan Cornette on set for last week from the ACC kickoff in Charlotte. You'll hear from the head coach of the Tar Heels next on Packer and Durham. There they are waiting on us last Thursday.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham Monday edition continues. Roddy Jones is here. Return of the Mac. Oh, my gosh.
Gotcha.
Our bumper music is on point here this morning.
Every time.
All right, ACC kickoff. In case you missed it, Mac Brown joined Jordan Cornette and EJ Manuel on the set last Wednesday in Charlotte. First question right out of the gate. What are the expectations for Sam Howell in his eyes this fall?
We've been the media darling, so we've gotten all this publicity, and all that's cool, but you got to produce. You got to do it. Everybody's talking about Sam with the Heisman. I went through that with Ricky Williams at Texas. He won the Heisman. I went through it with Vince Young. He was second. I went through it with Colt McCoy. He was second. Nobody cares who's second. So what we've got to do, Sam's going to play good, but we've got to play good enough as a team before he can be considered for the Heisman at the end. And that's it. It's about winning. It's about championships. It's about making a difference. and Sam can do that. But we as a team have to rally around him and make sure that we do our job.
Yeah, definitely. Coach Will, you look at what you did at Texas, those great – actually, that was my favorite bowl game of all time, the Texas-USC championship that you won years ago. What's the maturity level of this Carolina team compared to the team that you had at Texas? You obviously have Sam as a junior. You got Jeremiah Gimel as a senior on the defensive side. So what's their maturity level now?
EJ, it's a great question because we were fifth in the country going to Florida State and didn't play at all the first half and got embarrassed. Came back and fought, but – didn't play as well at Virginia as we needed to on the road. So we've got an unusual dynamic on our team. We got the older guys, some of the guys here today. We got a lot of really talented young guys that haven't been there and done that yet. So we've got to do a great job of coaching the young guys and get them to step up. And hopefully we can do that because we've got a lot more depth. Yeah. So for them to play, they're going to have to compete and going to have to compete every play. The Texas team was older. Yeah. We had just beaten Michigan the year before in the Rose Bowl. That team, I just said, good job, Vince. And that was good, Arakpo. And, oh, nice, yeah. Nice. I had to get them out in the third quarter at the right time. I had to keep them fresh for the games. Right. That was about it. So we're not near at that position right now.
Coach, so much of that explosion offensively came from that backfield and how dynamic it was. Not only could they run it, they could make plays as receivers out of that backfield. That has gone to the NFL along with two of your top receivers. Do you still have that element to the game with these new faces, or will these running backs be just running backs?
Jordan, we do. I've learned you can't replace who you had. We did it at Texas all the time. We did it at North Carolina with some great players. You just can't replace some of these guys. There's not a Javonte Williams on our team right now. So we quit talking about it. Just move on. But you got guys who have been waiting their turn that are really excited because 2 years ago, Javonte Williams was a short yardage and goal line back. Nobody knew who he was. So I think we're more like we were 2 years ago. We've got talent, but nobody knows these guys yet, and they've got to step up. It's why we took Ty Chandler, the transfer, grad transfer from Tennessee. He's been there, done that. He's played in that game with Georgia and Florida and Alabama and Auburn, and he's been hit in very physical games. So he's not going to get big eyes when we go up to Virginia Tech in the opener. But we've got some other really talented guys. They're just not there yet. And that's why we've got to do our best job of coaching between now and the Virginia Tech game and continue to get the younger guys on this team to live up to the expectations of the older ones.
Right. And, Coach, talk about your front seven on defense. We obviously spend so much time talking about the offense and running backs, receivers, but talk about Vahasik, those kind of guys that are in the trenches that are going to really be the staple to your defense, making sure they hold down that run game.
EJ, we only lost one player. Yeah. We lost Chaz Surratt, who was really good, but Eugene Asante came in the Orange Bowl and was our leading tackler, so we should be okay there. The difference, I think, in last 2 years and this year's, we finally got some depth. We're going to be three deep in the front, so we're going to be able to roll guys. And I've said, you put your hands on your hip, you duck that head down, you're out. Don't even get close to it, man. It's 100% every play. And I think late in the Notre Dame game, they beat us down. Late in the A&M game, a top five and top two team, they beat us down physically. So we got the same offensive line back. We'll be a lot better in the defensive line. I think our two lines of scrimmage will be much better than we've been the previous 2 years.
Coach, an elite recruiting class coming in. I believe it ended up being ranked 12th in the class of 2021. Whole lot of talent there. Are there some names that might become household ones very early on in the season to watch out for?
I think so, Jordan. You know, you hate to pick one out sitting here on the set because you'll forget and the mom's going to get mad at you. I've learned that. You didn't even mention my
kid. This guy's been coaching for a while, no doubt.
So, but you look at big guys that make a difference. There's a lot of fast guys. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys that can run. You got to have a quarterback in modern day to make it. You look at the top four last year in the playoffs, they all had great quarterbacks. You look at the NFL, the ones that were playing at the end had great quarterbacks. Maybe the best ever won the Super Bowl. So you got to have a quarterback. And it's about offense. Now, it's not defense is good if you get a stop because it's a field goal. I mean, we're not talking about stopping them anymore. So I really feel like the lines of scrimmage and probably the Keyshawn Silvers and the Javari Ritzies and those big guys, Dez Evans, we're looking like a different football team now than we were 2 years ago. And we're going to get off the bus looking better. And in stretch and pregame, people are going to say, they look pretty good down there.
Awesome.
I know you want to keep talking.
I want to ask him one more question.
Go ahead, make it quick.
Look, Coach, now that you have the dynamic, you've had a bunch of first-rounders, second-rounders in your time as a head coach, but now you have some guys at Carolina that are going to be the same way. What's the dynamic now with the NIL and them having marketing agents and things like that?
EJ, it's a great question. I was against it because I thought amateurism was amateurism, and I thought we were getting a little too close to being the mini NFL anyway. But my wife told me that students have been able to brand forever. A musician can make money. An artist can sell their art. So why shouldn't an athlete be able to do the same? And I got it. We got this thrown on us without guidelines, so we're all kind of learning what to do now. But the biggest thing, we're forcing guys to learn about federal and state taxes early. We're forcing them to learn about agents early and a marketing agent and what he's going to charge you to get that opportunity and how much money you're going to have left after the taxes and after the agent. So I don't think that it will affect more than three or four guys on most teams. And what we're concerned about is, what about the backup right guard? Mm-hmm. What about that walk-on? He's busting his little rear end out there. Yeah. So let's get some group licensing where we can help everybody. Yeah. And when Sam Howell sells that jersey and they make money, let's spread it out across the team. And I think that'll end up saving us in the end.
All right, because of our long friendship, I'm obliged to let you wax for about 30 to 45 seconds on Reva Hasek, because you think that's maybe the most underrated guy in the league, don't you?
Well, he's starting to get his due, Wes, so I can't keep trumpeting that he's the most underrated. He's starting to get his due. But look, this dude in the middle has been as disruptive a guy the last 2 years as anybody, and the numbers may not be eye-popping at all times because he's not always asked to go penetrate in the backfield and get the ball, but Reva Hasek has been as good an interior lineman as there's been in this league for a couple of years. You know how much I have talked about him. I love this dude. I love the way he plays. He plays so hard, and he's so strong there in the middle that I'm glad EJ brought him up. Anytime Reva Hasek gets a little bit of love, my heart is warmed on the inside because I love watching that teacher.
I know it. All right, sit tight. 8 o'clock hour is on the way. David Hale at the top, David Teal at the bottom, and in case you missed it, with Kenny Pickett along the way as well. Don't forget, at 9 o'clock, we've got the official preseason poll of ACC football as voted on by the panel last week in Charlotte. We'll get to that and more. But on the other side, David Hale has some thoughts about realignment, QB play, and a takeaway or two from the ACC kickoff. We'll get to Mr. Hale when Packer and Durham continues after this on ACCN.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.